My topic this morning is what's in the genes. And my name is Barbara Collins, and I teach at California Lutheran University. I teach a variety of subjects. You name it, I teach it. Not quite. I teach biology for the majors. I teach ecology, microbiology, genetics, and assorted plant courses. What I want to talk about this morning first is give you some background information about the genes. Then we'll get into information of how things get started, and then we'll talk about hereditary diseases, certain ones, some dominants and recessive ones. Then we'll get into perhaps personality and other kind of things that could be inherited. Okay, let me give you first a little background information. What I want to start with right at the real beginning, we'll start with the egg and sperm. So up here in the back blackboard, we've got an egg here and a sperm. The egg actually is quite a bit bigger than the sperm. It should be actually much larger. And to fertilize the egg, actually you've got this little area around the outside, this sort of a zone of extra material that the sperm has to get through, this jelly-like material, before it actually fertilizes the egg. And to break its way through there, actually you need the enzymes of many, many, many sperm. So if you only had one sperm and one egg, probably no fertilization. So actually there's millions and millions of sperm all around this egg. One of them gets in and fertilizes the egg. Which one? That's the one that made you. It could have been one of a billion others, and maybe you would have turned into an Einstein, a Danae, or who knows what, but the one was you. In the process of the fertilization, only one can fertilize the egg. If two were to do it, you would not end up being alive, because that would give you then too many chromosomes. There are in the egg and the sperm each have 23 chromosomes. So the egg and the sperm unite, you end up with 46. If you had two sperm, it just wouldn't work. Sort of interesting what happens when that one sperm penetrates the egg instantaneously, just like that. There's a change on the membrane of the egg, causing then, prevents any other sperm from getting in. It happens instantaneously the minute that one sperm has gotten into the egg. After that, probably about 30 seconds later, you can visibly see a membrane lifted off the egg. If you're looking at it under the microscope, you can see that, and you know when the egg is fertilized. Until that point, it looks just floating around, looks normal. But once it's fertilized, you can see that, and then of course that would also prevent further sperm. So only one sperm then can fertilize the egg. Okay, we have 23 chromosomes here and 23 in the sperm. So you get 23 chromosomes from your mother and 23 from your father, and they combine to make 46. Actually, the 46 chromosomes that you have are in pairs. So we number them 1 to 23. 1 would be in pairs, 2 in pairs, 3 in pairs, 4. And we number them from the large to the small. So number 1 would be the largest chromosome. Number 23 would be theoretically the smallest. But actually, number 23 would be the sex chromosomes, and I'll be speaking about those a little bit later. So 22 then would really be your shortest chromosome with the least information. Okay, every normal cell in the body, other than the egg and sperm, will have then 46 chromosomes. And the fertilized egg likewise would have 46 chromosomes. On the chromosomes would be all the information that's needed for making a living organism, all the information you ever need for the rest of your life for any kind of thing. So in other words, in that nucleus, the chromosomes would be in the nucleus of the cell. So here's just a normal cell here, and in it You have the nucleus. And in that nucleus, you have the 46 chromosomes. You can look at a typical cell, one of your own body cells, you can take a little scraping from the cheek lining and look at it under the microscope, and you can see your own cells, you can see your own nucleus. That nucleus has all the information necessary to make another you. In other words, if you had it in the right environment, you could make a clone of yourself, another you, theoretically. It would have to be, however, within an egg and, of course, within the proper environment. You would have to take out the nucleus of an egg. You'd have to put your nucleus in. Then, of course, it would have to be in the uterus of the female. But theoretically, all the information is there within the nucleus, so to build another individual. Okay, so you've got 46 chromosomes. I'll just make a chromosome looking like this. Could be a chromosome. It's composed of the substance called DNA. DNA is the molecule of life called deoxyribose nucleic acid, but we call it just DNA. And it has on the DNA then is the information that the body can use for anything that is to be produced. Okay, the language of the cell is in the terms of what we call bases. And we have four of these, four different ones, and they're strung out on the DNA. The order of these bases is just like, the base is like a letter. And the language of the cell is a three-letter word. So you have these three-letter words all strung out on the DNA. So we have four different kinds of letters in the alphabet, and each word then is three letters. We string these together, and then you get out the sentences or words of the cell. Sort of like a cookbook in a sense, because you can open it up and there would be all the information that you would need. At any one given time, not everything's going to be produced. Certain things are produced at certain times. Usually it's the environment that triggers what is going to be produced at a given time. Last time someone asked, well, you know, you start with just a fertilized egg, what causes you sometime in the development to end up with arms, legs, muscle cells, nerve cells, eyes, you know, all the parts of the body. This is because the egg is so large. If the egg were the size of a sperm and the two united, you'd end up about as complex as a slime mold. But fortunately, the egg is big. And so the egg, the environment of the egg is very different. It's different at the top here and the bottom. So what happens? You have the fertilized egg, it divides in half, and you have two. Then it divides again, and you've got four cells. Now the nucleus in all those cells is the same, but you see each has a different environment. One is down here, one's up there. And gradually then, the environment differs for the different areas, and so as a result then, you get different things expressed, and pretty soon you get the differentiation, you get the arms, the legs, the and so on. So that's how that happens. So all the information then is on the DNA. Well, then the next question is, what about hereditary diseases and such? What happens? Occasionally, we get mistakes. And some diseases can be just one letter is out of place. You know, it'd be like writing a whole paper, you know, writing a letter, and you're typing away. How often do you make a little mistake, you know, instead of T-H-E, it's maybe L-H-E or whatever. That would be enough in the human body maybe to cause a whole disease. Sickle cell anemia, for example, just one letter out of place, just the wrong letter, and you end up with a disease. So sometimes it isn't very much that causes a hereditary disease. So then you wonder, how amazing it is that any of us are here. You know, how many of us could write a whole book, a cookbook, without making a single mistake? Not too many of us.
You call that a mutation then?
Yeah, right. That would be a mutation. Just one little mistake. It could be just one small letter within the DNA.
Are there any ever missing?
Pardon me?
Are there any ever missing at all?
Yeah, that would be the same kind of effect. A missing or an addition can happen, and again, that would be in a mutation, right? It could be a change, missing, or addition, any of those, right? So any mistake on the DNA. Ultraviolet radiation, sunlight, can cause mutations. But the body has an amazing repair mechanism, and for a period of time, it can repair damage. But if there's too much, then that repair breaks down. So people laying out in the sun, you can do it for a period of time, but eventually the mutation may, the body will not be able to repair the amount of mutations that occur, and so you may end up with skin cancer or something like that. So the body has an amazing ability to repair mistakes, and yet the fact that we're here again is rather amazing based on this particular system. Okay, so that gives you a little background information. Let me go back to the beginning, the egg and the sperm, and let's talk about sex and the sex determination. The egg, females, first off, I guess we've erased the nucleus here. Just a matter of chance, which the egg happens to have, but it will get only one X, because in the process of forming the egg and sperm, if you remember, you half the number of chromosomes. You go from 46 to 23. So you only get one X. And the sperm then, what about it? The sperm could be then an X sperm or a Y sperm. Okay, so it looks pretty simple then, doesn't it? Looks like if the X sperm fertilizes the egg, what have you got? You've got yourself a female. And if the Y sperm were to fertilize the egg, you've got an XY, which is a male. And sounds really simple. Actually, it's not quite that simple. I mean, we do have mistakes occur and different things. Okay, let me mention a family that lives in town. My daughter went around with one of the girls. And I was never quite clear on how many were in the family. She never seemed to know quite, but I gathered there's either 9 or 11 girls in the family. No boys at all. There was just the one boy was the father. And I wasn't sure whether the 11 were all daughters or whether the mother was considered in this 11. But at any rate, what's the probability of having 9 daughters and no sons? Pretty slim. Because theoretically, it should be 50-50 chance, you know, either the X or the Y, 50-50 chance. Maybe you've heard of some families that have all sons, no daughters. Again, theoretically, that shouldn't be happening because 50-50 chance. Now, maybe 5 and 3 or 4 and 6, but certainly not 9 all boys or 11 all girls. What's happening? Obviously, something different. Well, a couple of different possibilities could be occurring. First off, maybe the X and Y sperm don't have equal viability. Maybe the Y, for example, in the family with all the girls, maybe the Y sperm for some reason was not viable. Another possibility could be the female reproductive tract. Maybe it was too acid for the Y sperm. Maybe too alkaline for the Y sperm, something of this nature. They've done some studies with the X and the Y sperm. They can separate them, they're different weight. And also they have different tolerances for acidity and alkalinity. This could be determined and you could figure out perhaps why the situation. Another interesting thing, the X sperm's a little bit heavier. lives longer. The Y sperm lighter, goes faster. Okay, supposing now the egg has not been ovulated yet. Intercourse has occurred and the sperm's coming up here, you know, swimming up its way, reaches the, in the uterus, and gets to the fallopian tubes. You know, there's two of them, so half of them go one way, half the other way. So all those, if you might have ended up Einstein or some great musician, they're all up in the other direction. I think mine, you know, my ability to sing, it's all over in the other direction. Well, anyway, here we are. Some come up here, and if the egg has not been has not ovulated yet, still nothing there, what happens? The Y sperm are up there, and nothing there. They tend to die off. The Y do not live as long as the X, so they tend to die off. Then finally, maybe 12 hours later, the egg is ovulated, but the Ys are all gone. But the slow X's are just chugging along, and there they are. There's the egg, and there are the X's, and so what do you have, a girl? So you see, timing is a very important thing, because the first ones to get there would be the male, the last ones are the lady sperm, and that would be. So that's sort of an interesting factor. Some mistakes can occur with the sex chromosomes. There are cases known in which you have individuals with an extra chromosome, an extra X or an extra Y, or sometimes they're missing an X. Okay, what could cause these? Apparently, it may occur during the development of the egg from the in the ovaries or in the testes. Sometimes the egg may not develop properly, and for some reason or other, you may get two X's or maybe no X's, or likewise, a single Y. So in this case, maybe, again, you've got two X's or something. All right, what happens? You might end up with an individual that has, instead of two X's, they may have an X and a Y. Such people are known, and they're called Klinefelter syndrome. And it's a condition in which the individual is a male. They look like a male, but they have a lot of female characteristics, the fat would be female, and so on. So that occasionally occurs. Another instance, you can have an X, Y, Y with two Ys. That one, rather interesting, they did some studies in some penal institutions and found that there were more X, Y, Ys there than there are in the normal population. It appears that people that are X, Y, Y tend to be more aggressive, more tendency toward criminal kinds of things. So individuals in XYY could be that way. Then a question might be, well, why not test everyone at birth, find out what they are, and then maybe we could treat them accordingly. There are pros and cons to that. And supposing that you gave birth to a boy and it turned out to be an X, an XXY. Well, you'd be asking your doctor about it, and he'd be telling you, well, XXY tends to be more aggressive. They're very often in jails and so on. I don't think you'd be too happy to know this, you know, at birth. And it doesn't always occur. And the thing is, you might look at your child when he's 2, 3, or 4, and you know how sometimes some kids are a little bit hyper and they're all over and acting destructive. And you might be just sitting back and saying, oh, well, that's expected, you know. He'll probably end up in a jail. But you know, you could somehow subconsciously expect the wrong kind of behavior and tolerate it. And so it would be self-fulfilling prophecy. So it would be better, in my thinking, perhaps, maybe not to know. It depends on the individual, of course, and who's raising the child, whether you could get that out of your mind. Okay, it's an XXY, he's likely to do this, this, or that.
I I'm curious about if there's any research done with homosexual population. If it's genetic or if there's any research on it.
Very good question. At first, I had thought that it was a large biological factor, perhaps genetic, but now I'm beginning to think that there is a large environmental factor too. So how much biological, I don't know. And I don't think we really know. And I don't know what studies have been done on this. A good question, but I do feel that here, you can't say it's just biological, just hereditary. I do feel that there's an environmental involvement.
Can XXY be either male or female?
No, once there is a Y, I'll give you an exception here. Once there is a Y, it's a male.
So the XXY and the XYY are both males.
Right, once you have a Y, it is male. Now, there's an exception to that, too. That's the problem. There's an exception to every rule that you indicate. All right, this they discovered in the testing for the Olympics. I don't know if you remember. They used to do a cheek, they called a buccal smear, to check to see if you're male or female in the Olympics. Obviously, if you're male, you're going to have a distinct advantage if you're running against the females. Okay, so they would do that test to see if you're male or female. And I guess they discovered that there were some XY individuals. Okay, XY, that's a male, right? Yeah, they were, thought they were females. They looked like females. I mean, everything was female. They had been raised as females, and suddenly they had been told they were males. And this was very, very shocking. And because they were really females. And you can imagine what would happen if you were told you're an XY and you're really a female. And then we discovered that really a person can have the Y chromosome and still be a female. There's only one gene on the Y chromosome that determines sex. In the very, very early embryonic stages, you can be either male or female. There is no sex determination then. If you have the Y chromosome and that gene, the Y antigen they call it, then that triggers the gonads to develop into testes. If you do not have that Y antigen, you can still have a Y chromosome. If you do not have that Y antigen, you will end up female. So apparently in some cases then, and we only discovered this because we did all this testing, you see.
You're talking about male or female genetic, according to our organs.
Right, yeah. Right, okay. Right. Because after the very early stages, then the whether you are XY or XX or what makes no difference. Because once you have developed the testes, then the reproductive organs will carry on in the hormones and everything else. In primitive organisms, the chromosome condition could be more important. But with us, it's just in that initial starting the development. And then after that, the gonads themselves take over. So we only discovered this when we started to do the, what we call them, karyotype. You actually look at the chromosomes of everyone. Another interesting thing about the X and Y chromosome, the female has two X's, the male has only one. The Y chromosome has almost no genes on it other than the Y antigen and maybe one or two others. We have no real conclusive evidence that anything else is on the Y chromosome other than maybe a gene for hairy ears. But we call it hypertrichosis of the ears. But there are some pictures in the genetic book of this guy from India with his long hair hanging out of his ears. Supposedly that's on the Y chromosome. But very little. Then the one might question, well, therefore the male only has the one chromosome and the female has two. But in reality, the female only has one active chromosome too. The other X inactivates. And so in every cell of the female, one X is active, one is not. And it darkens up and you can see it, and that's what they're looking for in the cheek test they're looking for that darkened thing on the, in the nucleus, and it would actually... Here's the cell, there's the nucleus, a little dark thing there. They call it the bar body. And if you have that, then you would be the female.
So if like with this testing in the Olympics, if a woman who was physically a woman was had an X and a Y,
they would discard, they would kick her out.
And even though she'd been raised as a woman and she was physically a woman, they tell her that she was a male?
Mm-hmm. That's what happened. Right now there's a lot of controversy. I think they're not doing the test anymore because it caused a lot of problems. See, this was a surprise. We didn't expect that.
Would this explain then why there are women that would have more masculine characteristics even though they're physically a woman, and vice versa, a man who had more...
feminine characteristics.
Yeah, could that be the reason?
There could be a variety of things. Also, we have found that some people are what we call mosaics. Maybe most of your cells are XX, but you may have a few XXYs. And those are the individuals that are really, you know, somewhat half and half, or, you know, have other tendencies. I'm not sure. If you do have some male tendencies, it would be a hormonal kind of thing. Maybe you have a lack of one kind of hormone and too much of the other. The hormones are very, very similar, and a very delicate balance. So anything could offset this.
Are you saying then that with some homosexuals, the reason that they are homosexuals can be proven through genetic inheritance, but that others may not be?
No, I don't think we can prove anything at this point. Mm-hmm. Or I don't even know if studies have been with the amount of hormones and such. Again, it's just a very delicate balance of the hormone on the brain that would influence kinds of things. And I'm not sure. I know that, you know, a normal boy developing will have the, you know, the urge to go with girls and otherwise, but just what causes the homosexuality, I'm not sure. I've read a variety of things. Some suggest that it is a biological. In other words, it could not necessarily be hereditary, but biological, what I'm meaning, just a imbalance of hormones, or it could be environmental, could be a learned behavior.
So there's a whole range probably there.
I think so.
Of cause and effect.
They don't know that it isn't a result of possibly some chromosomal disorder. I mean, I don't mean in all the cases, but in some cases it could be caused actually by chromosomal
or
varieties.
Even a mutation, there's slight error could be. Again, I don't think we know. I don't think there has been that much study done on it. Carol, you have a question?
Yeah, I was called, because I was a pastor of a local church, I was called by the Veterans Administration at one point if I would help, if my church could help a very poor person that was a veteran. And then they warned me that this person was rather unusual and was a hermaphrodite. And the thing that blew my mind is that after I talked to this person and this person's son, what I didn't know was which side of the person fostered the son or gave birth to the son. Was this a male? Could this have been a male that had a son, or is this a female? Did the female part give birth to the son?
Likely the male. I'm not sure. Again, you'd have to know the situation.
Well,
if it's a hermaphrodite, generally one of the sex organs are developed and the other are only partially developed.
I was trying to be discreet.
Yeah. So you wouldn't, yeah, you'd really have to know a lot more, but probably, I would suggest probably the male. So hermaphrodites are very rare. They're not that common.
Yeah.
And it could, probably could be that the individual was a mosaic of XX and XY. Yes?
Are there many genes on each chromosome?
Yes, except for the Y chromosome. Chromosomes have hundreds of genes on them, just hundreds. And we could say, well, maybe we don't know half of what the genes are. We've located a few, you know, on some of the chromosomes, but there are many, many, many that we haven't. I mean, the length of the DNA is incredible.
Isn't there a genome project to make a map of all the genetic?
Yeah, yes, they're working on that because they're hoping by that way to be able to determine the location of certain markers for certain hereditary diseases and such. Takes a long time, and we, particularly with human, with humans, it's much more difficult because we have to find ways of working on it without working on the individual. The older ways were just working with like fruit flies and stuff like that. You made them, and then you'd find out what you did. But we have to work with a cell now. With the,
you know. I've heard there are at least 8 different gene pairs they've identified that have some determination about sexual propensity and other factors dealing with sexual about that?
No, I don't, and I would assume that there are probably at least that and many more, and it would not only be on the sex chromosomes because other kinds of, the other chromosomes also carry genes that have sex influence, so to speak, so it would not necessarily be just the X and the Y. Okay. It is possible then to have an extra chromosome. You can have the extra X because in the case, supposing you were an XXY, again, one of the X's inactivates later on, and so you still only have the functioning of one X. However, the individual would be slightly abnormal because of the extra addition. Other cases in which you can end up with an extra chromosome, one would be Down's syndrome. This is a case in which you end up with an extra chromosome. In this case, it's the shortest of the chromosomes, technically number 22, but we call it 21 because that's what it was called earlier, and rather than change all the books, we go along with it being 21. But it actually is the shortest of the chromosomes, and that the situation then is that the individual with Down's ends up with one extra chromosome, so again, not normal. Now, what would cause that? Again, the failure would be in this early development of either the egg or the sperm.
I'm talking about Down syndrome. I know that the risk goes up as a woman gets older. Why is that? Why is that true? Or does it have something to do with the egg, or the health of the egg?
Yeah, that's very true. We find that particularly after age 40 or 44, the risk of having a Down's child goes up considerably, and then from then on, the risk becomes quite great. Although there has never been a real published explanation for this, I don't think we have a reason that we know for sure. But in my mind, one factor could be the following. The female, at birth, all the eggs are in the process of division. They remain that way until they're ovulated. They're partially divided. In other words, they're in the process of division. When the egg is ovulated, it completes that division, and then it's ready to be fertilized by the sperm. Okay, we have learned through studies of cancer that a dividing cell is vulnerable. Therefore, since in the female, in the ovary, all the eggs are in the process of division, your ovary is very vulnerable. What are you vulnerable to? Any kind of X-ray, background radiation, radon, if you will, any kind of radiation. And supposing now the woman is 45 years old. You've had 45 years of being exposed to background radiation. A greater probability of having a faulty division. Whereas if you're 25, that's only 25 years, much less likely. I've also heard suggested hormonal as you get older, the hormones are maybe beginning to peter out, that could be a factor. You've been subject to diseases. I've heard suggested that certain virus diseases can cause faulty division. So there are many kind of environmental things that could cause this during the course of your life. Now, go ahead.
Is that what we mean by maturing of the egg? Is that when the division becomes complete and it separates from, or what do we mean by the maturing of the egg?
Well, first the egg, it is ovulated, and then it completes the division, the first division. There are actually two divisions. Completes the first division, then goes into the second division. And then the, if it is fertilized, it will complete the second division, and then it's ready to accept the sperm nucleus.
Oh, it divides before?
Yes, it's in the process of division in the ovary. It is ovulated. At the ovulation, it completes that first division, starts the second, but it never completes that until the sperm hits it. Then it's finally completely ready.
So is there truth that there's just so many eggs in a woman, or is it?
Yes, but there are many more than you're going to need for a lifetime. So, but yes, that's right. Whereas the male, you continue to reproduce. Whereas the male, this would be less likely to happen because you have continual reproduction in the sperm. Whereas the female, that's it. You've got them and they're there. And some other things about Down syndrome. First, we thought it was just transmitted via the female, but we now know that it can be the male also. It can be the male or the female, although more frequent with the female.
If this is an extra chromosome, can that be taken off with genetic engineering?
No, because you'd have to know in the very, very early stages, like when the egg is fertilized, because every cell in your body has the extra chromosome.
You wouldn't see that in any kind of scan or test that you speak of.
No. By the time that you're able to do amniocentesis, you could check it then, yes. But there'd be nothing that one could possibly do.
If you did artificial, artificial fertilization in a culture dish where you had the egg and fertilized it in a culture dish where you had the egg and you could work on it right there with that?
Well, in other words, in the test tube baby, are you asking?
Yeah.
In a test tube baby, theoretically, yes, but the problem is you would not, you've got this fertilized egg, and then you're dividing it. Maybe you've got a 1632 cell egg or whatever, 64, but you certainly can't take one of those cells away and check it out to see if the person has Downs, because then they're missing a whole part of the...
Before it was fertilized.
Oh, no. No, again, would be the same problem, because you're going to wreck the cell that you're testing. So that would be the end of it. I mean, you might find that it's normal, but then you've killed it in the process. So that is going to work too well. Some other things, question up there.
In determining the causes and the reasons for homosexuality, I understood you to say it's environmental and it's biological. Who needs to know?
Exactly. It could be either, maybe. Both factors are interacting. They're different.
Could you say the same thing of a lesbian situation?
I think that would be the same kind of situation, really. And I have heard of some stories in which it seems to be environmental, but other times perhaps there is a biological factor.
I was just curious to know, when you're talking about the theory of being able to test something in a Petri dish, if a woman could have one of her eggs checked, and that egg could be okay or not be okay, but it wouldn't have anything to do with the condition of the rest of her eggs anyway, isn't that correct?
No.
Just because there's one egg that's been damaged doesn't mean the rest of them are.
Right.
Or vice versa.
Right. Yeah. It would be just a chancy thing of...
Yeah.
Whether you happen to ovulate the damaged egg or not.
Right.
It would be very chancy. There's some other possibilities as far as Down syndrome is concerned. some people are known as carriers, in which case they would have one less chromosome. They'd have only 45 instead of 46. And the extra chromosome, I mean, they'd have the right number technically, but one, that little 20, that little 22 one is attached to number 14. So it only counts when you do the counting, you come up with 45 instead of 46. They have everything's there, but you see one's attached. And those are carriers for Downs, because if you get that one, plus the additional 23, and then the normal amount from the other one coming in, then you end up with the extra chromosome. So an individual that is a carrier, one third of their children will be Downs. Therefore, if one were to give birth to a Downs baby, it would be very smart to have a chromosome check of yourself, both you and your husband, to have a chromosome count to be sure that you are not carriers. If you're not carriers, the chances would be 1 in 10,000 or whatever it is in the general population to have another Downs baby. However, if you are a carrier, then 1 in 3 would be a Downs baby.
What might cause a miscarriage?
A miscarriage can be a variety of kinds of things, and I think it depends on maybe when it occurs. Could be that maybe it was an extra chromosome. It could have been maybe you had three chromosome number ones. It could have been that there were too many chromosomes. Could have been some other kind of mutation. Could be radiation could cause such malformation in the fetus and therefore a miscarriage. Otherwise, it could be in yourself, maybe the hormones weren't proper. There could be many, many reasons. So we don't know. In many cases, it could be that the fetus is not normal and will not develop properly, and so therefore it is discarded.
When in this fertilization process is multiple birth control?
Okay, talking about twins or triplets. Okay, there are two ways of getting twins, triplets. One is that you may have two eggs ovulated. Now, if you're taking these fertility pills, that's very likely. You see, you have more than one. Normally, only one egg will be ovulated, and it would be from one side 1 month, one side the other month. But if some families, some people, will ovulate two eggs at a time, one from each ovary. Or if you're taking fertility drugs, you may have several eggs ovulated. Okay, so if both of those eggs are fertilized, you'll end up with twins. Three eggs fertilized, triplets. They will be no more alike than brother and sister, because you see, they're separate eggs, separate sperm fertilizes them, and they will develop as brother and sister, but they'll be born, you know, twins. They'll be no more alike. However, if you have identical twins, it's a little bit different. In that case, you have one fertilized egg here. The first division, instead of staying together for some reason, and this seems to be a hereditary thing too, it splits, and you end up with two cells. And they're both normal. They both have that 46 chromosomes and everything. So you've got two cells now. And then, in some cases, like the Dione quintuplets, if you remember them, one of these divides again, and one of these divides again, you've got four, and then another one divides, you end up with five. So they're all alike, pretty much. So the nucleus would be the same in each one of them. Those are the identical twins, and then each would develop separately. So identical twins then have the same nucleus. It has the cell has divided. Fraternal twins that are like brother and sister, separate egg and separate sperm. Carol?
I was going to ask, I read someplace, Barb, that that some of the birth control pills and medication actually causes a condition in the female, maybe fluids or something, or acidity or other kinds of chemical reaction, which would imply that there will be more females born. Is that, have you read anything about that? That it would be against the possibility of the male sperm or the male.
Oh, in other words, the fluids produced prevent the male versus
so that,
the female.
So there are more females born because of birth control being used. I read that about 10 years ago.
That's rather interesting. I really hadn't heard about that. I don't know, but we do know that there could be a possibility. I don't know if it would be all people would react accordingly, certainly, but could be a possibility, because we do know that the alkalinity or acidity does affect the one sex or the other. Could be a possibility.
What about alcohol and another thing that could be possibly genetic? What's going on there in the genes? Is it just something in the gene?
Yeah, alcoholism is another situation. I don't think alcoholism per se is inherited. However, I think as far as heredity is concerned, personality traits can be inherited. And it could be perhaps an addictive personality that is inherited, and you are in this environment, and perhaps that could be the cause. I think you don't necessarily have to become alcoholic because you have alcoholic parents, but maybe it may be harder for you to avoid it than for some other people. So I don't really think, okay, there's a gene that says alcoholic. I think it's maybe more a personality kind of thing. Is there another question?
What about birth defects and things like that from a mother that's drinking heavily during pregnancy?
In this case, birth defects from a mother who is drinking. I think this may be a little different from alcoholism, but the presence of the alcohol in the body can definitely affect the fetus. And there you can have, the fetus is very sensitive to any kind of chemical things present, because you have to consider that the fetus, particularly in the third and fourth month, have a certain number of cells, and each cell will develop into a large part of the body, so to speak. And if we harm just one cell, it can be a major area that we're harming. Whereas with us, we could tolerate environmental changes. So I think it's really important for a woman who's pregnant to be very careful. Don't expose yourself to radiation. That can cause mutations. Drinking the alcohol definitely will have effects. Drugs and so on.
Yes. When you talk about radiation, is there any problem with just, say, dental x-rays? You wear the lead apron.
Yeah. Dental x-rays, I would say, is no problem. Back in the old days when you used to x-ray your feet, you know, to see if the shoes fit, and some of the older x-ray machines, you know, are not that good. I used to I was a geologist in my, working for my PhD, and we had this x-ray machine that we had to be working in. You can see them, but literally, I'm sure it was just leaking x-rays all the time, and we had, in those days, very little protection. But I think now we're much safer. Dental x-rays, I wouldn't worry about, you know, and just be sure that they do cover you up well with the lead apron and not, oh, well, we won't need it this time. So just be careful about that. And I think the exposure is very minimal for the x-ray and that kind of thing. How's our time? We've jumped up. Okay. I was going to mention also a little bit about some hereditary diseases. Some of these are caused by what we call mutations rather than a whole chromosome. There'd just be one little mistake. Many of the diseases are what we call recessive. In other words, you've got two chromosomes. Remember, two ones, two twos, two threes, two fours. On one of the chromosomes, you may have a mistake. Okay, the other one is okay. If the mistake is recessive, that means it's sort of hidden. As long as you have one good chromosome, you're okay. It's just if you have two bad ones that you express the disease. Okay. Occasionally, but not very often, a mutation can be dominant. What we mean then, you just need that one faulty one and you've got the disease, even though the other one's okay. Rarely is a genetic disease dominant. In most cases, the parents both look okay, but they're both carrying the recessive gene, and the kid ends up with the two recessives. In some cases, a dominant one can cause disease, and the most common example is Huntington's chorea. It's a dominant. Okay, usually, if you had a dominant mutation that was really bad, you're not going to have kids because you don't want to pass it on. But in this case, with Huntington's chorea, it's a dominant, but you don't know you have it till you're 40, 38, 40. And so you've already had your kids, it's a little late at that point. And then, you know, so a lot of times the kids have not even known that their father or mother had the disease. Maybe they were kept aside or no one told them, you know, or because apparently the death is very horrible and you start shaking and then incapable of doing lots of things. I guess it's a very slow, horrible death to watch. And I've heard of instances in which the children have not known that their father died of this disease. And then, or if they do, you see, he maybe, and so they've had kids, and then you see it's too late at the point that they find out you have Huntington's chorea. And we don't really, supposing now your father died of Huntington's chorea, is there any way of you knowing whether you have it or whether you're carrying the gene? If you have it, you will get the symptoms probably late 30s or 40s. Is there any way of your knowing? At present, we don't really have a good test. There may be some kind of tests that we can do, but nothing really conclusive. We're working on this, and presumably we will end up with a test for this. But at present, nothing really conclusive. So you see how a dominant could be passed on because the parents don't know. The other instances would be the recessive, in which both parents are normal. For example, let's talk about something like an albino. Both parents are normal, and yet they have this child that's an albino. It's because they're each carrying the gene for albinism, and so the child is an albino. So if the two parents are carriers, one in four of their children then would have this particular condition. If it's a dominant, like Huntington's chorea, one half of your kids will end up with the condition. Some of the hereditary diseases are what we call sex-linked. In this case, the gene that's faulty is on the X chromosome. There it is there, two X's. That's a female. She has a faulty gene there. Let's call it hemophilia. She's okay. Normal bleeding time, no problem. She doesn't even know she's a carrier. She marries a normal man. Normal XY here. We make the Y like this so you can recognize it a little bit different. Okay. One of her sons ends up with this Y. But he gets this bad X. He doesn't have anything to counteract it because the Y doesn't have anything to counteract that. And so then he ends up with hemophilia. And so it is transmitted from the mother to the son. So he ends up with hemophilia. This is what happened in the royal family, that the boys had hemophilia. Rather interesting, a story it was written concerning this historical novel, Nicholas and Alexandra. Very good book. And it suggests that the whole history of the world has been changed because of one of the boys, one of the offspring from Queen Victoria. It was the Tsarevich, Alexis, and he was to become the Tsar of Russia, but then they had the whole turnover and the communists took over. And the author of the book suggested that that was because he had hemophilia, and the mother then took the advice of Rasputin, known as the Holy Devil, and did the very wrong things as far as the government was concerned, and so brought on the revolution. Sort of interesting, very, very well worth reading. Yes?
And, it wouldn't be passed on to a daughter because she has a good X to counteract.
Exactly. Now, the next question is, would it be possible for a female girl to have hemophilia? Yes, but unusual. the only way would be she would have to get this chromosome and the father would have to have hemophilia. So the father with hemophilia would have to marry a woman who's a carrier. Now that's not too likely. So, but otherwise that would be the case. Yes, question?
When you were mentioning about personality traits and being addictive as one, what other personality traits might you inherit, or is that genetic, or is that?
Yeah, a really interesting question. I don't think we have all the answers. All we can do is study identical twins, preferably if they have been separated at birth. And we find out that they have the same kind of likes and dislikes. Sometimes if the identical twins live together, and I talked with one girl to a considerable extent concerning this, she said she purposely changed her likes so that she could be different from her sister. She didn't like being an identical twin because the mother treated them, the twins got one toy and the other sister got a toy. And so they were always the twins. And they were never treated as individuals. So she went to great extent to alter her likes and dislikes so that they were as much different as possible. So she would purposely not do what her sister would do just so that they could be separate. But if you find them separated, they're in a different environment completely, they will end up having very similar likes, behavior, habits, speaking similar. Very funny, I have another friend who's an identical twin, and they're older now, and it just cracks me up. They've been living apart for years and years, and yet they're so much alike. Their little mannerisms and things, the way they talk, and it's really funny. It almost makes you laugh because you almost think it's the same person, yet it isn't quite. And so I think a certain thing, yes, because they're the same DNA, I think a lot of behavioral kinds of things are inherited. We could say maybe a tendency towards being an introvert and kinds of talent would be inherited. Maybe you have certainly ability to sing or a musical, artistic capabilities, or maybe you're very good at science and math and these kinds of things. I think lots of these can be inherited. So yes, there are inherited things, personality and the way you, some people are, you know, have a short attention span or otherwise, others, you know, are content to figure things out, whatever, and these kinds of things. It's rather interesting, again, sort of personal case history. In our family itself, we've got three kids that are biologically ours and two that are adopted. So we've got five kids, two with very different genetic and the other three. Now, if we just had our own three, we would look at them and say, oh my goodness, they're so different, you know. Yet, they are. They're very different, the three that we have. Yet, when you compare them with the other two, you can almost say, whoa, these are like peas in a pod compared to these other two that have no genetic similarities between these three. I mean, this is what we've noticed in our family.
Those that are of the persuasion of behavior modification, do they still believe that a lot of the personality is inherited? It's just that there is also an environmental influence?
Yeah, I think there is both, right. You can certainly modify behavior, there's just no doubt about that. And there are a lot of environmental factors, yes indeed. And in a sense, it's very, very difficult to separate the two. And it almost gets to the point of ridiculousness. You cannot. Because what do we mean by environment? And the environment means that you have the differentiation in the first place. And the chemical environment, there's no way of separating the environment. But the two are together, right? But there is definitely a hereditary aspect, too. And the two work together. But I think another kind of thing, too, well, you might say, oh, well, I don't have the talent for this or that. But, you know, we don't use half of the capabilities that we have. I mean, we just barely tap the surface of the brain, and so you can't go around with a cop-out attitude. You do have talents, many, 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 and we just barely tap the surface of what we're capable of doing.
I wanted to ask you a question about hair color. I have a lot of skin color. Say a blonde, blue-eyed woman has a child, and the father is has dark hair and dark eyes.
These are what?
They're dominant genes, aren't they? Or like, say, brown?
Yeah, eyes. Generally, right. Dark hair and dark eyes tend to be dominant, right, over the blue eyes. But it's not that simple. We know as far as skin color is concerned, there are many genes that determine skin color, and very few people are pure white, so to speak. And likewise with eye color. In other words, I ended up with a gray-blue eye. My brother has sort of brown eyes, and my father had blue eyes, and my mother sort of green. Now, the green eyes, is several genes involved, not just the one, you know, it's either brown or blue. Because if you were to look at people here in the environment, you'd notice around here, you'd notice that everyone's eyes are different. Some are really light blue, some are a little darker, and all different shades. And so it's how many of the genes you happen to get for the darkness will determine the color of your eyes. So yes, dark is dominant over the light, but the color of the kid's hair will determine how many of the light versus how many of dark they happen to get. If you have two people married who both are very, very light, with very few or no dark, then your kid is going to be the same. Whereas if you have a dark person mating with a light, you get a lot of variation possible. I mean, not total black, but, you know, in betweenish. You get much more variation possible. So two brown-eyed individuals could give birth to a blue-eyed child. Because, you see, they're just carrying the lighter.
What about the stories that a black person in your background can be carried many generations, the gene can be carried many generations
into
the future?
No, I've heard that one too, you know, how way back, you know, great-grandmother was black, and of course they're all white, you know, and suddenly give birth to a jet black child. No, that's not possible. You've got, if you had two mulattoes marrying, you could get a jet black child, but you can't if they're both pure white. You're not going to end up with a jet black child.
What about the blacks mixing with the whites? Would it progressively get lighter?